What's up, hot queens?
Did you bring the baby gherkins?
This is when I really felt like maybe we shouldn't do this podcast.
Astronomical.
I hate to see it.
Wasted potential.
Are you drunk?
I am so drunk right now.
Welcome to Bad Author Book Club, where we're not like other authors, we're worse. Oh, I forgot to say my name. I'm Claribel A. Ortega.
And I'm Ryan LaSala, and we're two authors reading the most bizarre fiction we can find, just doing our fucking best every goddamn day as we struggle through Kendall and Kylie Jenner's The Story of Lex and Livia, Rebels, City of Indra. And we have got a action-packed episode before us. But before we get to that, hot queens, first of all, it's been so lovely seeing so many of you out in the wild. I just want to say, if you come up to us at events and introduce yourself as a hot queen, a listener of the podcast, we love it. We text each other right away. And second of all, if you would like to follow us on social media individually, you can find all of our socials in the show notes and the podcast socials as well. But also, you'll find a link to our Discord where all of our listeners love to hang out and make memes and fan art and generally do really chaotic things. Sometimes I check it and sometimes I scream. And we're in there as well, too. So recently I was really I had like a touching moment in there, Claribel, that you were part of as well, where someone was talking about getting some rejections on a story that they wrote. And I was so like heartened to see people like popping in to like give them love. So our Discord has turned into such a special place. So if you're a listener and you want more of us, more of the community that we're building, find the link in our show notes.
Yeah, it that was such a sweet moment. And so you would think that we're just, I mean, we are all a mess, but like we're also like a supportive, sweet community, just a little weird also.
Yeah, and you should be so lucky.
You should.
Anyways,
I've heard that about you.
How are you, Angel? What's going on in your world? It's so good to see you.
Oh, it's so good to see you too. Everything's been good. I just got my production schedule for Witchlings 3, which is very exciting.
Baby.
I found out that it's most likely coming out in October of next year, which is so perfect and great. And hopefully that is like it stays that way because I don't know. I feel like October is the perfect month for Witchlings to come out, honestly. And I've just been working on those revisions and a few revisions on my young adult and also packing because I am moving in like less than 3 weeks. So,
oh my God, what a schedule. I mean, how do you even like prioritize all of that? Like, where do you even start every day?
I try to keep my daytimes to book related stuff if I can. There are some days where I can't focus, and so I'm taking advantage of those moments to sort of like pack. When I can't focus, I'll be like, okay, I'm obviously not getting any writing done right now, might as well pack. And then the days that I do get a lot of writing done during the day, I'll pack at night. To be quite honest with you, like, you know, my apartment, it is very small, and most things have already been packed or are already sort of like in boxes or kind of like storage bins anyway, like under my bed or on like the top part of my closet. So, and David, my partner, he got a lot of packing done while I was away in Korea as well. So we really don't have a lot to pack. The bigger job is going to be ordering all of the things for our new place because I'm going from like a small one bedroom to like a two floor, three bedroom, two and a half bath. And I have no furniture.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
So that is, but we made a list and like of all the stuff we're getting and what we have to get for each room. And if there's one thing I can do, it's shop. So I'm not worried about that.
Yeah. Take control. Shop.
Yeah. And I shall. And I just got the coolest TV for my office. And I'm just so excited. You know those TVs that are like art?
Yeah.
It just looks like art with a frame and then you turn it on and suddenly it's actually a television, but you can't tell at first glance. I got one of those.
What kind of art are you going to put on it? Is it going to be me?
It's going to mostly be you, okay. But also art of my books, depending on like my mood. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to just put different things up there. Probably funny things as well, just depending on what I feel like, because you can just change it whenever you want. But I love the idea of people being like, this is my office, and people being like, oh my god, that art. And I'd be like, actually, it's Netflix.
Yeah, wait. Listeners, I don't know if you're hearing what I'm hearing, but this is an opportunity. I think Clarabelle would love some really incredible fan art to put up in their future office. Yes.
A contest where if you win, I put your fan up in my office.
It's like the galloping horse art, but it's like all Veda with her VR headset on. We should have a contest.
Oh, God.
Give us the dimensions once you have them, and I want to see what people make.
I'm very excited. I'm my office is going to be like my dream office. Like, I'm going to have a walking pad, a standing desk, like like pink and white and gold and like cute. It's going to look like a fancy candy. That's what I want it to look like.
Literally describing the background of our meeting right now.
Yeah. Making Kylie's office.
Kylie's office. I don't know if people know this, but Clarabelle, the virtual background Clarabelle uses when we record is Kylie Jenner's like office or something close to. I don't even know what it is. It looks unreal.
Feels like a basement. I'm in a basement.
It looks basement-y. I'm like loving that her office is in a basement. There's no windows. There's one big TV, and on it is...
It's my favorite part.
Yeah, on it is Kris Jenner, actually.
Talking to Kylie.
Yeah, it's actually six TVs all merged together. It's like one of those like multi-TV monitors, and it's Kris Jenner. That makes sense.
It is so funny. I just really love this background.
Kris Jenner has read this book, by the way. I was thinking about this earlier. I do think she's read it.
I mean, she must have.
She's so in control, and she's so like aware of like all the business things going on in that family that I guarantee of anybody in that family, she's the one person that read this book.
Yeah, I just feel like she wouldn't not like consume something that's going to be put out.
That's right.
You know, like I agree with you for sure.
Like, I think she approved it. She probably wrote portions of it too.
Chris, if you're listening and you want to come on the podcast, like,
oh my god,
anytime. We'd love to pick your brain about business, because you're the governess of business.
Yes. Oh my god. True. Yeah. This is the only one that I want to hear from is her. Like, she's the one that I want to talk to most.
Oh my gosh. So yeah, that's what I've been up to. I've also been listening to a lot of like wellness podcasts. And I found this one by this Australian girl who's so funny, because the whole time she's just like, all right, you fucking cunt. This is what we're going to do tonight.
Oh my god.
She's just cursing at me the whole time. And I've realized that having beautiful women yell at me is like a really effective way to get me to do stuff.
I love that. Oh my god, that's why you love me.
100%.
Yeah, I knew it. I knew it. That sounds good, though. I'm on a wellness podcast. I haven't listened to anything real or interesting recently. I've been listening to the Head on Fire podcast, which a friend of mine hosts. Don, a lot of people know him from like TikTok, but that was interesting.
He's really sweet.
Mm-hmm. He did one recently with like one of the last like big art critics. It's like this like dying breed of like critique, and that was really interesting too, hearing from like a critic about like why they do what they do, like why they're able to do it, and how their critique is differentiated from like everybody else's, like what sort of that separation is.
That is interesting.
That was really cool. Yeah, so I listened to that, because there's some good combos on that podcast. Oh, I was at Anime NYC this past weekend. That's like a huge anime convention in New York. So I was like, why am I so tired? It's because all weekend, for the past couple of weekends, I've been doing like I had Y'all Fest last weekend, and then like a busy week, and then like Anime NYC was like this weekend, which I know was like leisure, but it's like very active, like con leisure. So you're like walking
still
around.
Still tiring. So sweaty. Tiring. Yeah. Lots of people.
Oh my god, tons of people. So that was all weekend. And my friends, like, we'll also like bookend it. Like, we'll get like dinners and stuff on like the evenings, which is really nice too. But I only dressed up one day. I was only Sailor Moon on Saturday, which was a big success, so that was kind of fun.
Oh yeah.
But then I didn't do anything on Sunday, which is also really nice. Just like walk around in like comfy clothes and just buy stupid, you know, backpacks that look like cats, which I did. Oh, wait, hold on. You want to see my cute little cat backpack?
Of course I do.
Oh my god, you're gonna love it. It's not our usual color scheme, so hold on, let me buckle it. I want to give you the full presentation. It's not our usual color scheme. It's going. I'm going for more like earthy tones. But look at this little backpack.
Oh, I love it.
Isn't this so cute? That is
super cute. And then super, super cute.
I bought a little keychain. It's a puffer fish and he's saying, okay.
I love it.
So when I fly to Ohio, oh, by the way, right after this, everybody, I have to jump on a jet to Ohio. Can you imagine? What have I done wrong?
Wow.
To be punished like this, but not that Ohio is the worst thing. It's what is worst thing is having to do like a late night trip to Ohio. Like I'm doing all this stuff today and then I have to like get sucked up into a JetBlue flight to Ohio.
Why are you going to Ohio?
So NCTE is the, what does that stand for? NCTE, like National Something Teachers and
Conference
Educators.
Conference of Educator. Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, it's like it's a teaching conference. So for anyone who like wants some behind the scenes stuff, a lot of what Clarabelle and I do when we're traveling for our publishing like careers is it's not necessarily like book events, like, you know, like a signing. It's like these big conventions of like librarians or English teachers or basically like gatekeepers in book world, and we're put into situations where like we're presenting to them or we're like schmoozing, and it's sort of like it's very like Katniss Everdeen at the Capitol, right? Like they sort of like bring us and like they're like, all right, like smile big, like put on a show, and we like, you know, and then we do sign a bunch of books and stuff like that too. So a lot of the travel that you see like authors doing is not necessarily like reader facing, yeah. Especially in like YA and especially in like middle grade and like children's books. So this weekend, not this weekend, I guess it's Monday, I'm going to the later half of NCTE, which is actually Allen, A-L-A-N, its own separate thing, part of NCTE though, and I'm going to be in conversation with another author with like a big crowd attending.
Well, that's fun.
Yeah, I'm excited about it, but it always feels a little silly to be like flown across the states to like a hotel to then get up, like have one thing, like one 40-minute conversation, and then you like go.
I know. That it's a little bit like the worst. Like I kind of like if there's like at least like a nighttime event, like the day before, something. Or some sort of like dinner or something, so it feels a little bit more worth it. Mm-hmm. But when you're doing just like one panel, you're like, was this like worth the anxiety tax of like me flying and doing all of this? But you actually never know if it's worth it, and like that's the thing, right?
Oh, because my God,
like
yeah,
sometimes there could be someone in that room who could like give you a life-changing opportunity. Mm-hmm. And so like those kinds of events also, it's not that everybody gets invited to them.
Truly.
So like neither of us say yes to everything, but I think that like we're strategic in that like if you do get invited to something that is like important, like an NCTE or Allen adjacent event, you'll go because it's you don't have a guarantee that your next book is going to be like you getting invited to these things.
Truly. Oh no. Yeah, and that's like that's why I used to say yes to everything, because I was like, oh my God, if I don't, like these invitations, right, they're gonna dry up. And now I'm being a little bit more strict with myself in terms of like being honest about like what I can and can't do. And in this situation, the only reason that this is such a short trip, I guarantee I probably would have been flown out a little bit sooner and maybe done like a few of the other events, but I specifically asked if I could take this weekend off from travel because I've been doing so much of it and I wanted to go to Anime NYC. Yeah. Which I know sounds like so silly, but like, you know, when
it doesn't sound silly.
Not to you, but I'm saying like just to people in general that like I know that if I heard myself say this a few years ago, I'd be like, that's crazy. Like, you're not doing, you know, an author event because you want to go to an anime convention. But now a few years in, I've done enough of these things that I feel like I get to set a little bit of like a limit for myself too. And to be honest, like, it's not like there would have been a ton of other programming that I'm missing out on because I decided to go to Anime NYC. But I know it's such a weird thing to be like having these like internal meetings with myself being like, all right, like what are we doing this season, like what can we afford to do, and what like what are we saying no to?
Well, I think the longer I'm in publishing, the more I realize that like so much of what makes a successful author once you're in it is strategy.
Yeah,
like so much of it is like figuring out like what is worth your time, what's not worth your time.
Gosh,
like how to plan out sort of like what events to go to, what not to go to, what books to work on versus not. Like all of those things can be really hard to like sort of figure out like what is the best use of your time, but mm-hmm. it's important not to just throw yourself at everything because we have limits as human beings, right? Mm-hmm. Like we can't possibly do everything. We do get burned out.
Yeah.
And as I've been like listening to other like writing related podcasts and sort of seeing the struggle that like mm-hmm. some other authors have gone through, I realized a lot of it came down to like not like obviously a lot of it is just like luck. But a lot of it is also strategy.
Mm, yeah.
Kind of like throwing yourself at like every project that comes your way and like quitting your job too early. And like all of these things really affect the decisions that you make later on in your career and like what you're forced to take on later on in your career. Mm. And I think we're in a position of like privilege and being able to turn stuff down because we've been smart about strategy and we haven't been afraid to be like, oh my God, I feel like everything's going to shit. Like, I need to regroup. And, like, talking to our teams, talking to each other, yeah. talking to our group chat about, like, what am I doing wrong and how can I make this better? And I think that is, like, something that not a lot of people talk about when it comes to author careers.
Yeah.
But, like, think about it. Like, we get invited to stuff all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that if we didn't, then we would absolutely still be in the I have to say yes to everything train, but now we're just like, oh, we'll get invited to something again, like I'm strategic about like what I say yes to, what I say no to, but I also have the luxury of being like, not this time.
Yeah, so true. And like, you would never know this listening to our podcast, or maybe you would. I feel like most of our listeners who are like listen every week do know this by now, but like, you just like tuned in, you think that we were complete idiots, but we're not. Like, we actually are very strategic. Yeah, well, you're right. Got us. But yeah, I think that a lot more strategy goes into a lot of these things than people like to even show. Like, I know many strategic authors that when you look at their content, you would think that they were just famous babies. They're always like, I don't know how this happened. Oh my gosh, can you believe it? And I'm like, yeah, that like plays well with a lot of the people that like to believe in the like dream and the fantasy of just like, you know, all it takes is talent and the dream, right? Like, that's kind of the fantasy for a lot of authors. Mm-hmm. But the fact of the matter is, even those people, even the woo-woo famous baby authors, they're shrewd motherfuckers.
They're probably
people.
The shrewdest ones because they're doing that on purpose.
Yeah, they're making this like psychopathic decision to always present this like, I'm so surprised to see my book in Target. It's like, bitch, you knew the buy-in numbers for Target. You got that email months ago. I know how this works, but here you are in a fucking cunty outfit in a Target with a camera ready beat
work,
on
bitch.
Your face. Yeah, and I'm like, I'm on to you. But you know, that's like part of the shtick too. So anyways, we're a lot smarter than people give us credit for just because we're so hot. And that's
just
what I wanted to say, actually.
Just because our tits are so big doesn't mean our brains aren't also so big.
And we're going to prove it. Let's hit the music. Let's get to the chapter. Hit it. There's no music.
Not like other girls. Okay.
Jeez.
Not like other girls. We haven't used that song in so long. Today's episode is chapter 17. Livia? For now.
Oh my God. So, if you're reading the hardcover version of this or like a physical version of the book, you open this chapter and something that we have never seen in this book has occurred. Livia starts it off, but then Lex takes over. And
it's that way in the ebook too.
Oh, is it? You can see it? Oh, yeah. So it's like this toggle between them. And we've never had a chapter sharing point of view. But of course, now they're like face to face for the first time. So we're about to get into it. So
we're about to get into it.
Okay, so this, which is a real struggle because I still can't really tell these girls apart that easily, and this chapter was really confusing for me. I have
a note for that specific thing that you just said. All of a sudden, Livia is talking like she's on Bridgerton.
Oh,
like,
my God. Yes. Yes. Oh, my God. This was crazy.
But it only like it goes in and out because like that's how it's been. She's talked almost exactly like Lex for most of the book. But in this one, it's like more pronounced, like just how like hoity toity she sounds. Mm-hmm. But it feels so out of nowhere. I was like, who is this British bitch? Like,
yes, they turned her hoity-toity dial turned to 11.
Oh my God, all the way up. She was like, give me all the hoity-toity, put it in the cart, I'm checking it out.
Yeah, she was putting doilies on everything. She put a coaster on her legs. Like, that's
what I've heard. Her dress is made of doily. That's what I heard.
Yes. Oh my God, I heard that she performs as Doily Parton.
To pee myself.
So guy, I have to go to Ohio. We have to get going. Oh my God. So listen.
I missed my flight.
Ryan, how come you didn't go to Ohio? Oh, I was too busy talking about Doily Parton. Okay, so listen, motherfuckers. So like the last thing that happened was like Lex put Livia into like a chokehold. Like that's where we left off. And Livia spends the first like few paragraphs of her section being like describing like there's no acknowledgement that like she's like literally being choked to death. She's like, what do we have here? Ooh, a girl clearly from the gutter. I'm like, no, guys, if your character is being choked, the most immediate thing to them is the fact that they can't breathe. It's not like taking in the visual cues around them. But no, she's like, oh, this person with such a unique appearance is choking me. Unique. First of all, how come they don't know that they're twins? Yeah, that too. But like, do they not know? I don't know. They are unable to recognize the similarities between the two of them, at least for now.
But they do recognize that they're hot.
Yeah. Yes. Oh my God. Yeah. She's like she is scandalous. She is wearing a shiny black outfit. I like this line. Stealth is surely not her priority. And I'm like, finally, someone's giving her the feedback she needs.
Drag her, bitch.
Worst
drag
spy
her
in the world. There's a mention of her untamed hair. And then this was crazy. Sorry. Okay. She's like, Livia describing Lex is like, I don't think she's gotten any work done, but I do suspect she's gotten a chest enhancement.
So, I highlighted that too. I'm like, big titty confirmation.
Not the big titty confirmation, but
oh my God.
Why is she, like, we haven't heard about Lex's huge tits yet. Like, this is
ever
the first
lost opportunity. Like, hello, we need to know if she is governess coded or not.
Yeah, so
I would have been a bigger fan.
Suddenly a
own
lot
voices
a lot
of for big like, titties.
Stop! No, please not own voices for busty for staff.
There's a line that is like, I mean, everything about this chapter is confusing, but there is a line where she's like, "I feel her confusion and fear and focus, but her loyalty is powerful enough to kill for." What is she talking about? Like, how does she know?
She's psychic. She's horse psychic.
That's right. Doesn't she feel things? I forgot
she's
about that.
She's horse psychic. Yeah, so she's feeling
right.
That. I think she's... Did you just go, yes?
No, I pointed at you and I said, you're right.
Yeah, so it's her, like, horse psychic powers telling her that, like, this person's angry with her. Who's choking her? I love the idea. Like, as an empath, I can tell that you're upset with me because you're literally choking me to death.
Yeah.
But she senses that the core of her anger is like loyalty, which is, again, loyalty, not an emotion, but that's okay. She's got basically like light telepathy is how I see it.
Yeah. And then Lex tries to say something like through clenched teeth or whatever.
Yeah.
And Livia is like, excuse me.
Oh my God.
But might you speak up? I'm having a rather difficult time understanding you.
She has not gone to elocution class. Like, she
the whole chapter is yes. Like that. Her garb is a scandalous, form-fitting, shiny black. Stealth is surely not her priority.
She's literally turned into Maggie Smith from Downton Abbey. Like, she's like,
seriously.
Yeah, so she's like, excuse me. Yeah, but my use of that, I was like, stop, please. Lex is like, put away that sword. She's like, absolutely not. And they start to like get into it. But I did like that. Livia's chapter ends as she's like, you might attempt a rational conversation. But then like Lex just punches her. And it switches to Lex's chapter. And Lex is
what's
like,
what's a pacifier?
I was about to ask about this. So They're basically like riot rods. So the first line of Lex's chapter is, "My pacifiers shut up Island Girl quick," which is a crazy first line to start your chapter on, because I don't remember what a pacifier is, and I also know what a pacifier is in my world. You put it in a baby's mouth.
Baby's
it's like
mouth.
A binky. So
yeah, I was that's like, what I thought.
I was like giggling because I was like, did she really just like reach over and put a binky in Livia's mouth? No, it's like a electric cattle prod is basically what she's fighting with. That's what a pacifier is. But like, we can have a zinger, we can have all manner of nonsense in this book, but you couldn't think of another word for a electric rod. But anyhow, that's what she's using. She's fighting with these like riot rods against a sword, mind you, and it doesn't work. The sword just like cuts them in half.
I found that like a really bad choice of word for a weapon as well. I was very confused.
Yeah.
At some point, Alex yells at the sword.
Mm. Oh, she tells the sword to shut up.
Yeah. She says, "Shut up," I yell. I can't believe I yelled at a sword. Mm-hmm. That's verbatim. They keep fighting back and forth.
Yeah. That's... Oh, wait, hold on. There's one thing that we skipped, which was this. I just want to point this out. There's like, in addition to this whole chapter being dedicated to like girl on girl fighting, which, you know what? Honestly, I love the girl fights in movies, like when it's like this bitch versus that bitch. Like, I'm like, that's fun. You know, as like a little gay kid, I always liked it when the girls in like James Bond films got to like, you know, go at it, because their fight scenes were better and they got to do like acrobatics. Anyhow, neither here nor there. What I wanted to point out, though, is that Lex to herself is like, damn, this girl's good at fighting. Like, of course, Cassina didn't warn me about this. Tricks on tricks. Cassina's so tricky. And I'm like, what are you talking about? Cassina, we were there for that conversation, mind you. Cassina never was like, go beat up this girl. And you did this. Like, remember, you flew out of the ground, found her immediately, and attacked her. No one told you to do this. So why would anyone have given you any preparation to do this? And you still are finding the time mid-fight to blame Cassina for this? For being tricky and vindictive? This is not vindictive. This is, you're being crazy.
Yeah, your plan was fucking stupid. As a matter of fact, I will once again beat this dead horse that Cassina gave her the information she needed, which is that her father
yes, right,
is heavily involved with Livia.
Mm-hmm.
And he definitely has intel that this young girl who was an assassination victim almost doesn't. And so it's her fault for coming up with a stupid plan. She's very like, keeps putting her foot in everything and then like blaming everybody else around her. So
and you know, and that's why you're up in this island yelling at a sword. I hope you, I hope you're embarrassed. Welcome to Clown College. Clown you. Honk honk. So she's yelling, and she's surprised though, because like obviously this girl's not going down without a fight. Like, she's really, like, she's like kind of holding her own in this.
Right.
And so she's like, wow, this girl's like full of surprises. But she's like, but I'm full of surprises too. Like, remember, like, I'm like PCF's finest. Like, she's a cop. So she's like reminding herself that like I can fight as well too.
They basically just keep going back and forth. At some point, like, Lex is like, this is for Kane. Mm-hmm. And she starts like beating the shit out of her. And then we go back to Livia, and they just keep getting one up over the other person. Like, they keep going back and forth, pinning each other, punching each other. Yeah. I feel like this was really drawn out. Like, I agree with you. I like fights between girls, like battle scenes. But both the motivation and the execution of both things, I feel like were like not really well done. Eventually, Lex does ask Livia like where Kane is, and Livia's like, how would I have that information? Like, hello. Once again, Lex is, it's her chapter, and she starts pulling, no, Livia starts pulling Lex's hair out.
Yeah.
And Lex is like indignant, and I'm like, you tried to kill her. Like, what do you want? Like,
second assassination attempt like in a week. This poor girl.
I think murder trumps getting your extensions pulled out. I don't know. Maybe that's
literally
just me.
Her extensions get pulled out of her head. This is also confusing though, because like they're going back and forth, and in both situations, like, because it's written in first person, right? Like the girl, like the POV is like, she comes at me quickly. She this, she that. And it's kind of easy to forget, like, whose point of view you're reading from. Because, again, like, the voices are now getting a little bit distinct, but, like, henceforth have, like, or, like, you know, they weren't prior to this. But yeah. I will say, one thing I appreciated reading this is that, like, each girl in her fighting is sort of pulling upon her specific background. So, like, for instance, one of Lex's hits lands because she's fighting dirty, and she's like, I bet the, you know, the girl in, like, the archive, like, she, you know, this girl has trained herself in the archives, she probably isn't being, like, you know, pushed
yeah.
in a life or death match, and so she doesn't know how to, like, fight dirty. But then, meanwhile, like, Livia's recourse is that actually she's got, like, her manicure intact, and she's able to use her long nails to, like, scratch Lex, and she's like, oh, it's a good thing that I got these nails done for, like, my ball. Like, they really do, like, give one a sense of, like, accomplishment, which is a line that governess or somebody said to her too. So it's like richness versus, like, you know, street rat fighting style. So yeah. I was like, that was kind of fun to see how they differed and how they would, those different backgrounds came in handy in a fight.
Yeah, that was good, I guess. I'm so sorry. I mean, it's just so drawn out. It's very frustrating because, like, this chapter is, like, a never-ending, like, kind of loop of, I got you now.
Yeah.
It's like, now I got her. Now I have her, like, right where I want her. Like, sort of, like, over and over again from each of them. Yeah. So it's very repetitive. And yeah. I just feel like we could have done without so much.
Yeah. And fighting. I keep on having to adjust for this new reality that we're in where Lex has huge tits. Like, I'm watching this in my head and I'm like, oh, pause, wait. And then I have to, like, edit absolute.
Yeah.
Huge boobs onto her. Well, because now that we know this.
Yeah, like, a very important detail that was left out. All of a sudden, there are decoys. Like, I'm pretty sure we've never heard of decoys before.
This was so crazy.
But,
yes.
Like, Lex all of a sudden can, like, project herself, like, over and over again. So Livia is, like, fighting all of these, like, holographic decoys of Lex.
Since when could she do this?
Is she? Never. I swear to God. I have never heard of this. I forgot to look it up, but
yes.
I am almost positive because there are other things that I looked up and I was correct, and we'll talk about that a little bit later.
Okay.
But yeah, so she's fighting the decoys, and, like, all of them turn out to be fake, and, like, Lex is like, there's one line that really made me laugh. Damn, she got the singing sword back. I got tricks too, air girl. I'm like, okay, why are you talking like that all of a sudden?
I also love, wait, this is so funny. So at one point, like, Lex disarms Livia and gets the singing sword out of her hand. And mind you, they're on an island. They're at the very edge of an island. We'll, like, they're at that, like, tree that has been mentioned a few times at the very edge of the island. But, like, very edge, as we'll learn in a second. She goes to take the sword to, like, disarm her opponent and to throw it. She's like, I throw it as hard as I can. And you'd think that, like, oh, you want to get this weapon away from your opponent. You'd think you just throw it into the vast expanse of blue around you. She throws it, and it hits the tree. Like, it's the only thing next to you. You could have, like, aimed a little bit better, but no, she, like, hits this, like, one small branch. Which then means, of course, like, we're like, oh, she's going to be able to get that. That yeah. sword is going to be recovered sooner rather than later. But, yeah, they're, like, they're going at it. The decoys really fuck up Livia, which is so funny because we haven't heard about these decoys yet. And then because of this, Livia is open to a roundhouse kick, which sends her careening off the island. She is kicked off the island Super Smash Brothers style.
That's what always happens to me, so I can't even judge her.
Yes. But it's like an insta-kill hit. And so she rockets into the space beyond the ledge. But, of course, then she catches herself. She has the sword in one hand. She's got the island in the other. And the tree roots have burrowed through the island into... So she can see the roots coming out of the bottom of the island, I guess, a little bit, which I can, like, kind of imagine.
How thin is it?
I don't know. I think, like, I see the island as, like, it's probably thinner at, like, the edges, but, like, it's truly, like, a floaty little island. Which, also, this doesn't make sense because, like, there's a lot of talk of, like, fistful of dirt and, like, grass, and I'm like, if this is all synthetic, like, is the dirt synthetic too? Is the dirt real? Is the island, like,
an actual floating rock?
Why are there, yeah, because the trees aren't real. But I don't know, I mean, like, it's real enough now that she's able to kind of, like, heave herself back up and Notably, she has to let go of her sword in order to, like, save herself. She has to, like, crawl hands, one hand over the other, up the roots to get back onto the island.
I found it really interesting that, like, Lex at one point says, good thing she's alive to still question. And I'm like, you immediately tried to kill her. Like, why are you now just being like, well, good thing she's not dead. I'm like,
you kicked her off the island.
Yeah, you've been trying to kill her since you got here. Like that, like since you got here.
You've had no other priorities in this past scene other than like kill her as quickly as possible. Like, what it reminds me of that sound, like, what happened to hello? How are you? like where she does need to go to etiquette class, because I think she just started with like a hey.
Yeah.
Have you seen Kane? Like, this would have gone very differently. But yeah, like, Lex is confused right now because she wants information out of this girl, but she's both, like, choking her. If she's not choking her, she's, like, kicking her off the island and making her fight for her life. But it does seem – I have a question for you. I think the point of this is to show that they're kind of evenly matched for the most part. Yeah, like, they're pretty good at fighting one another, even though they have different, like, fighting techniques. But eventually – it kind of goes into a deadlock. So, like, Livia, she scampers back up onto the island. And then they, like, start, like, judo fighting. Like, no weapons, just, like, fisticuffs. Here we go. And then they get into, like, a dual lock where, like, one person's being choked. The other person is, like, a pressure point is being pressed on their neck that's going to, like, incapacitate them. But then what happens? Oh, my God.
Fucking Lex sees.
Here we go. Yeah.
The symbol. Tiny as hers, in the same spot on her iris. We have the same marking, it says. Her eyes are different, just like mine.
What symbol? What symbol?
I looked it up.
Okay.
As I do.
Yes.
The symbol is not mentioned anywhere before this chapter.
Stop. No. Are you kidding me?
There's no symbol. The word symbol is not in the book at all before this chapter.
You have got to be kidding me. Wait, this detail. Okay, I thought I was going crazy because it's mentioned as if we've heard of this before.
Yeah.
And my note was going to be like, well, I'm ready to believe that it was mentioned because there's a lot of things that I'm not remembering because we're reading this so slow. But like, okay, that makes me feel better. I feel like this book gaslit me into thinking that this had been mentioned, but hasn't been in it.
I searched symbol. I just searched neon, which is the other way that it was described. And I searched shape, but the only time those words are used in relation to the symbol in the eye are in this chapter.
So, okay. So all along, both girls have been withholding the fact that there is a, like, insignia in their eye, which is, it was crazy enough when we learned that they had heterochromia, right? Because that was also withheld until finally, like, one of them admitted it. Like, and then they both were talking about their different colored eyes. But it's deeper than that. There's, like, literally, like, there's, like, a signature. There's some sort of symbol in their eye. Wait, hold on. Let's go to the front of the book. Is there a symbol in the eye on the front of the book? Well, there's a girl flying through space in the eye, but I think that's just something else. I don't see any other symbol, though.
Yeah, this very much seems like something they made up on the spot and then forgot to, like, seed in through the beginning of the book, which that happens sometimes. Like, sometimes you think of something as you're writing, but then it's your responsibility to go back and make sure that there's mention of it before, because this is obviously very important.
What about, like, the next thing? So, like,
this also nowhere in the book before.
Nowhere in the book. Oh, no. My God. This is driving me crazy. So they see the symbol in each other's eyes. A symbol that has been there for a really long time that they think is a genetic flaw because Lex was worried about it causing her to be, like, bottomed out of the orphanage, but no one ever saw it because it's so tiny and you would never even see it even if you were looking for it. That's what she says. But somehow she sees it in the heat of the moment in Livia's eyes. And then from the darkest part of her brain, she says, a voice explodes from a memory I've never had. Which I don't know if that means that it's not her memory or if it's a memory that she didn't remember until just now. Jury's out on that. But the voice says, when you find her, you will know who she is simply by looking in her eyes. Which Livia says that last. Stop laughing. Livia says that last part out loud. like reading her mind or potentially having like the same memory exploding from the darkness of her brain or something. But I want to get to that in a second. But my question to you is that really was never in the book prior to this?
No, I searched all matter of things. And the exact quote, especially, because it seemed like this was a thing that was said before.
A refrain of some sort.
This is the first time that it's mentioned. And as far as I can remember or have searched for, there has been no mention of a man's voice sort of infiltrating their thoughts before, either of them. But they are both saying that, like, oh, I have this problem sometimes. The words weren't mine. It was some other voice, a man's voice. She nods. So it's almost like we're meant to discover this like amazing mysterious connection between them at the same time to make it like shocking, except it's not shocking because we didn't know this was happening. So it just feels like a heavy-handed, like convenient mechanism that they just dropped onto us, and it's not, it doesn't feel effective at all.
This is several many confirmations in a row that are not previously discussed or mentioned individually. So the fact that they're coming up now as something that they both have feels so zany and also like improvised.
Yeah, it's a mess.
They have a man's voice is speaking in their heads and through them, and I'm like, ain't that the way? I mean, really, can't these girls live without a man trying to control their bodies? But too late, he's in there. And my theory is that this is going to be their father.
Yep, that's exactly who it is.
The famous geneticist, and that this is going to be some sort of like locked away memory or something that like they both have as like babies, I guess. I think that's what we're hearing. But he has given them this memory in the precise moment that they need it. And Lex is like, have you always had that in your eye? Yes, she says, nodding, looking frightened. And then they both sort of feel frightened. And then this sort of like pauses the fight because they're both so shocked by what's been discovered. And in that pause, suddenly out of the sky drop a bunch of PCF patrollers from overhead surrounding them, being like, hands up.
Yes. And then Lex is like, oh, Cassina, I am truly going to kill you, bitch.
What the fuck?
At this point, leave Cassina the fuck alone.
You always have time for Cassina to blame little Miss Cassina. And that is a little like, you know, we have to investigate what control Cassina has over you here, because she's nowhere to be seen. She's not even here.
No, and she didn't tell you to come here either. That was your own stupid choice.
I would even argue she told you to go somewhere else.
Yes. Very true.
Do you think, wait, question, huge question. But by the way, that's the end of the chapter, everyone. But a question before we get to our Rose and Thorn. Is Lex wearing Cassina's thumb this entire time?
100%.
Ew. Let's start with thorns then. Do you have a thorn for this chapter?
My thorn is both the neon eye symbol and the man's voice that were like inexplicably like dropped on us out of nowhere. Frustrating to say the least. Like, been looking for sort of like a thread to hold the plot together, some sort of
bare minimum,
something to like make us be working towards something. And I feel like we had two things. Very conveniently could have given each character one of those things to focus on. Like, if they both heard the voice saying, you'll know when you find her, and then one of them could tell by the symbol in the eye and the other one because the other one finished their sentence, and like that was the moment they realized like the prophecy came to be in their mind. Right. But instead, we're told about this like really important thing as it's happening. Yeah. And it's just so truly frustrating because, like, it frustrates me more when there is a vehicle to make the book work and you have it in there and you don't utilize it. You utilize it incorrectly.
The prophecy can't be coming true as we learn about it.
Yeah.
like, we needed to know the prophecy ahead of time to create some sort of dramatic, like, tension to this. Absolutely. But we're learning about it as it's happening. So it's sort of just like, well, that's actually just a thought.
Yeah, that's like that having the whole Lord of the Rings books happen. And, like, we don't find out what the ring is until, like, book three or something. Like, we need to know that what the ring is about. It's from the very, very beginning.
And Lord knows we spent enough time with these bitches, like, going through their whole ass childhoods, like, for seemingly nothing, right? Like, that's where you sort of layer in and embed these moments of people saying something pretentious, portentous, right? Like, people, like, they're, you know, some man being like, you will know her when you see her, and, like, you echo that through, like, a few different things, yada, yada, yada. You don't just bring it up here, especially when the audience has been fucking dragged along every year in countdown leading up to this moment. I'm like, what was that for if not for this?
Okay, so I did think of a rose. I do like the fact that this chapter goes back and forth between their POVs. I think that's really fun. I like how it sometimes ends on one of their thoughts and gets interrupted by the others, like picks up right where the others sort of leaves off. I thought that was like a fun way to make the chapter where they meet each other stand out. However, I'm very afraid that they're going to continue to do this throughout the book, which is going to be really make it even more choppy and like disjointed. And I'm scared. But we're like halfway through the book at this point.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they're just now meeting, which I think it took a little too long if you're asking me.
Yeah.
But I'm glad that we're finally there. It feels like when we got to Modeland.
Oh, yeah. Okay, so that's a good segue, because I was going to say my rose is that, like, the girls are together and we kind of get to see the clash of their different upbringings and how it affects the way that they interact, right? So I really like that, for instance, even their fighting styles are sort of informed by the types of training that they have, and that, like, Lex, you know, she, like, plays dirty because she's gotten into real fights all of her life, versus, like, Livia, who's, like, more strategic and more, like, calm because she's had, like, way more, I don't even know, manicures. And so, you know, and as someone who just got their toes done, I feel like I too
time to kick probably, a bitch
time to kick time to go kickboxing. But I mean this can't continue, because this was so, I felt scrambled by this, like the toggling, like mid action sequence, like that was a little bit fun but not distinct enough to really be effective. But yeah, I'm gonna say that my thorn is that this ended with, like, all of these, like, weird, you know, things being uncovered in the nick of time and being introduced at the exact same time, too. And it wasn't a really strong chapter to begin with, but it was exciting. It was fun. And I felt I was gratified as a reader to see the two girls interacting, but it felt a little bit, like, cheapened by the fact that, like, instead of having some sort of conversation, right, like, instead of seeing that, like, they have something in common and then talking about it, it was like, oh, we see that we have something in common, and instead of, like, debriefing it in the moment or pausing to say, like, maybe this is worth investigating, some man speaks into our heads and through us, confirming it, which completely takes the impact and the power of that realization away from the two characters. Yeah. And the fact that they're girls makes it a little bit worse, but it would be bad no matter, like, what sex or gender the characters were. Yeah. Because it makes it less powerful, because they're not actually doing the work of having this realization. They're sort of being told this, and then immediately the chapter ends with, like, you know, the PCF fighters coming in too. So it feels like we had a moment to kind of have this and it got taken away, which sucks.
I agree with you. I totally agree with you. It's also frustrating to see that Lex continues to only have one speed, and it's fight. Like, her reaction and her sort of, like, solution to everything is to, like, go in guns blazing and think about it later. And it's just been so ineffective for her, and it makes her character so deeply annoying, because there are different ways to fight that don't, like, require fists. And the fact that she doesn't know that, as someone who supposedly had to survive this, like, rough and tumble childhood, doesn't make a lot of sense to me. She would have had to psychologically fight her way through to get to where she was. And she should be a little bit better at, like, slick talking and, like, reading a situation if she's, like, the street smart one, right? That, like, goes to show what their perception of sort of, like, a poor person is.
I was about to say this. Yes, like what it takes to be a poor child in their head is just like tough. There's violence everywhere and you got to fight your way through it, when the reality is that there's way more to navigating that.
Yeah, 100%. And when I moved from the Bronx to Westchester, people were literally afraid of me. And I was like, I was a straight A student theater kid who went to a preparatory school in the Bronx. Like, terrifying. You just have this perception of me because of where I'm from and because of my right. accent, maybe because I mm-hmm. used to sound like Cardi B when I was 12. But now seeing this, it's like, of course, that's how Lex is portrayed, as someone who can only communicate through violence. And it's just so deeply problematic.
Yeah, and you're right that it's not once ever worked for her. So, like, if you're gonna give a character this, like, this flaw, right? Like, there has to be, like, punishment on the page about it. And there are people that have told her, like, you really always punch first, ask questions later. But the plot continues to roll. Like, it's never cost her anything plot-wise right. to do this. It's working really well, actually.
Yeah.
That she's just, like, fighting her way through this, too. And it's this complete misunderstanding of... like how this character I think should have been approached, but you're right, it is also very offensive.
And I think that there's something to be said for this being part of her character arc, and I think that's one of the ways that the book is suffering in terms of the length and how long it took us to get to this point, because we could have shown her growing and learning that, like, there are more ways to solve problems. But we are so far into the book that it's, like, too late to do that now. Like, it's almost like if we do that by the end of it, it's like, I don't actually care that she changed, because she's been doing this for, like, 110 pages at this point. If this encounter had happened, like, a lot sooner in the book, it could have worked, but it didn't because they're stupid. And so now we're left with this.
We could just take that soundbite and apply it to a few things in this chapter, right? Like, the language, the, like, hoity-toity language, the weird prophecies, had they been done earlier and a little bit better, this would have landed, I think, with a better blow. But alas. No, that would be asking for too much. So we have reached the end of our chapter, Hot Queens. We so enjoy talking about this book. So if you are enjoying listening, please find us wherever you listen to podcasts, rate the podcast, share it, bring more people into the fold of the Bad Author Book Club, and also let them know that Discord is open and ready to accept them. It's been such a joy seeing people's thoughts. Let us know what you think about this particular episode. You can find links to all of our socials in the show notes, and if you'd like to follow me, co-host Ryan, I am on most often TikTok and Instagram, and occasionally Twitter, at the Ryan LaSala.
And if you want to follow me, Clarabelle, I'm at Clarabelle_Ortega pretty much everywhere online. I'm not really active on Twitter, but I'm on Threads, Blue Sky, Instagram, and TikTok.
All of the above.
Yes. And go buy our books.
Oh my God. Yeah, I keep forgetting. Go buy our books, because, you know, I'm flying all the way to Ohio to sell books. That's what this has pushed me to.
Yeah.
Flying to Ohio.
And I'm furnishing a whole house, so I need money.
Yeah. So take that to the bank, preferably our bank.
The bank of hot queens with big old boobies.
And a big statue of Doily Parton.
out front. I love Doily Parton so much.
Me too.
All right. See you next week, hot queens.
Bye, angels.